This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
I loved your... Well, it was Planet Lockdown, I think, with James Patrick. You did a video with him and I absolutely loved it. And from there, I've seen a lot of your commentary and your work. And you really have taken hold of this topic of transgenderism, transhumanism. Let me start off by asking, what is the agenda?
Well, nothing like cutting to the chase. What is the agenda? The agenda is to obscure sexual reproduction on the way towards abolishing sexual reproduction. Now, it could be a very long game, as far as I know, but the technologies are poised to basically take over human reproduction eventually. And the gender narrative in its current iteration is basically used to obscure the deconstruction of sexual reproduction into consumerist parts for the market. So we no longer have biological systems, whole biological systems that are connected to the world, the biological world. It basically takes away that, you know, that connection to the biological world. And it reduces us to hormones, gametes, chromosomes, penises, vaginas, eggs, sperm, etc. And children are being groomed for industrial body dissociation, for the market and for the future market in technological reproduction. So that's what's really going on here. And all of this is obscured by conversations about gender and expressing oneself and et cetera. So people aren't really getting to the industry side of things. This is the adult male fetish of transsexualism, otherwise known as autogynephilia, whereby men seek to own womanhood for themselves, for sexual gratification. And it's the escalation of that fetish to own womanhood through reproductive technologies. You know, and it's framed as a human rights movement. You know, transsexualism is now framed as a human rights movement. Industrial body dissociation is being framed as progressive and good for society, for the people who choose it. Now, the word transgender brings in all sorts of, it's not just no longer just a man who fetishizes being a woman, but what has escalated out of that are all these different identities that are now all brought together and all these different reasons why people are choosing to reform their sexual anatomy through medical technology. You have all these different gender identities, you have eunuchs and the promotion of said castration, you know, for anybody who wants it. They have non-binary surgeries now, which is basically where they invert a man's penis into a hole that they drill in his body. They actually leave the penis intact. They drill a hole into his body to create what? A hole for penetration. So this is non-binary surgery, and it's being advertised in what are called, euphemistically called, gender clinics, which are eugenics camps, basically. There is about 300 of them now, or over 300 of them in North America. I think the first one for children emerged in 2007, funded by the Pritzker family, who we can get into. So this is what's going on here. The missing ingredient in all the conversations, basically, is industry. This has turned into an industry now in sex deception. And what it does, more than it changes the people that, you know, are having these surgeries, it changes us, the rest of us, and our perceptions of reality, which is that human beings are a sexually dimorphic species. And so this industry is being marketed in the culture as a human rights movement to drive it through institutionally, corporately, into the market. So people don't really realize what they're looking at, that this is, you know, industrial scale colonization of the human body, of the human reproductive system.
I remember, Jennifer, when I was much younger, I watched the Rocky Horror Picture Show and Bugs Bunny cartoons. And obviously in the Rocky Horror Picture Show, it was all satire. It was a joke. When Bugs Bunny dressed up as a woman, it was a joke. Now, it's not a joke. And I'm trying to figure out, when did all of this begin?
Well, I mean, you could say it started in the 1930s in Germany when they were doing these, you know, medical technological assaults on men's reproductive anatomy. You could say it started in the 1950s when the first American man went off to Europe to get his medical assault on his reproductive anatomy. You could say it started in the 1960s or 50s with the sexologists. They're taking the idea that expression of sex is totally cultural. And okay, so we could start there, or we could start where I start is with Martine Rothblatt, who is a man who calls himself a transsexual transhumanist and has appropriated synthetic simulacrums of women's biology, their reproductive anatomy. And he's a tech entrepreneur in America, widely, widely accomplished in many different fields, especially the medical tech sector. He's worked on the human genome, which is manipulating human genes at the UN level, trying to establish some sort of legal protections and ethics, basically, ironically enough. And he has a religion called Terrasim. It's a technological religion which seeks to create God with technology. And he's written down this ideology, which he has basically culled out of, he has sort of culled an analysis out of these social movements to make into his own cult ideology, which seeks to undermine sexual anatomy. He's also very, very invested in artificial intelligence and believes that AI is human without skin. So, and this is what his ideology is basically pushing through the culture. And because he has such renown in so many different fields and has accomplished so many different things, people just go along with this part of his ideology that we can deconstruct the sex binary and we will be liberated through that process. There will be no more sexism. Women won't have to have children with their bodies. It can be done through technological reproduction. And he's also been very, very invested in virtual realities. And he was mentored by William Sims Bainbridge, who was the head of the Human Cyborg Program at the International Science Foundation, which funds most of the, or I don't know if it's most of, but a lot of the scientific research in the United States. And William Sims Bainbridge has been very, very invested in cults and artificial realities. He's one of Martine Rothblatt's mentors. Another one is Ray Kurzweil of Google, who also calls himself a transhumanist. Now, these words really are pure obscurantism because nobody has ever, you know, transcended their sex reality or their humanity thus far. But this is where technologies are moving us, you know, away from the biological and more intimately engaged with technologies like Neuralink, for instance, you know, putting a computer right into somebody's head. And of course, there are many, many others. It's hard to get into in a very short podcast. But the transgender, as it is being presented now, is really the reproductive front of this transhumanist ideology. Already we have, you know, surrogacy, which is a technological means to reproduction. And you have three different biological parents in this process. Often you have one woman's eggs, a man's sperm, and this is injected into another woman who gestates life in her body. And this child is, or what grows into a child, is fed through her organs and is attached to her body, and she gives birth to this baby. So this baby is her baby. She is the mother of this baby, though she is erased with the name surrogacy, you know, or surrogate, right? And motherhood is also being erased in the culture, as is womanhood and woman. Words relating to women are no longer just relating to women's biological processes, but also they're trying to attach those to men as well, who call themselves trans women. Yeah. And they're also, you know, they're researching just insane things like putting wombs into men, implanting them into men so that men can, you know, have the full experience of womanhood.
But Jennifer, I mean, let's be honest, you're just being a Luddite. You are resisting progress for the sake of progress. But I mean, look, in all seriousness, is this not just us being old farts? I mean, is this not an inevitable conclusion of technological progress?
Well, it is, as it's sown to a neoliberal market, you know, which is basically globalization, deregulation, privatization, where everything becomes about individual wants and desires, and there's no ethics really established to control the advancements of these technologies. And when that happens, basically the oligarchs in society, which is what is happening, get to decide when and how these technologies are used for profit without really considering what that's going to mean for humanity. So right now, the sex deception industry is really in its infancy, but there are more and more powerful people engaging in this sex deception, like Rachel Levine, who's the health secretary of the United States, various politicians, like I said, Martine Rothblatt, Jennifer Pritzker, who's, you know, a multi-billionaire. They're in positions of power to change legislation to have this fetish and the technologies that are now going with it normalized with a front of human rights for the marginalized. So I'm actually not completely a Luddite. I mean, though I think we should start moving back in that direction. How can you argue with such amazing things that technology has brought to us? I don't completely, you know, argue against that. But there has to be some sort of evaluation process that involves the people that this is going to impact. Because otherwise it turns into very much, because it's governed by the market at that point. If you don't have that structure in place, then it's all governed by the market. So, you know, like when they had cell phones, it was kind of like, okay, before we had cell phones, it was like, okay, we're going to give you the choice of using a cell phone or your landline. And if you don't want to get into the whole cell phone thing, carrying around artificial intelligence, you know, you don't have to, right? Except then they took out all the public telephones. I don't know if they did that around the world, but they did that in America. You know, they just, you can't find a public telephone anywhere now. You have to have a cell phone. If you're on the road somewhere and you get lost, you want to be able to call somebody. So, but that's how it works. You know, yeah, you're allowed to have freedom. You know, the choice they put forth, oh, you have a choice. No, you don't really have a choice because, you know, they make it impossible to engage in the market and to engage in civil society without the new developments that they make. And so these technological reproduction techniques, you know, if you include surrogacy, it will, you know, run into the hundreds of billions of dollars by 2030. That's only 6 years from now. So that's a vast stream of revenue. And then with this human rights frame and promoting through the market and advertising, which has been so relentless, it's become literally cult indoctrination. You're basically sterilizing a lot of people, a lot of young people who are going to need assisted reproduction as they, you know, get to the age of having children and they want to have their children. In fact, there are companies now that are freezing and encouraging the freezing of sperm and eggs for future use for these individuals that are having their reproductive anatomy medically and technologically assaulted. So that's a big industry, as is, you know, the legal framework around all of these choices, right? Surrogacy, the legal, you know, you have to have legal contracts for this process to go under. Freezing your eggs and your sperm and these different technologies, they need legal apparatus to go forward. So there's an industry on that side. And then when you medically and technologically assault someone's reproductive anatomy, there are all sorts of complications that go with that. It's not how we're made to live because it's just not. There's so much money to be made already and is being made, and the market growth is really exponential when you look at it. And when you get into more integral transhumanist manipulations to the human body, like genetic engineering, choosing what color hair your baby's going to have, you know, whether you want two parents or three parents, or as Martine Rothblatt suggests, we might even have animal parents in the future. He does have a xenotransplantation farm, by the way, grows pigs for human hearts and lungs for people that have no other medical choice. You know, and so this whole human rights frame really obscures all of the industry aspect of it, right? So that's what I focus on.
The thing that confuses me, Jennifer, is how does a rational, sane person actually buy into this? Curtis Yarvin, he refers to something as the cathedral. I'll bastardize it a little bit by saying it's academia plus government plus media, which could be symbolized as a metaphor for the cathedral. And if you go against it, you're an apostate. Obviously, you're an apostate, as am I. But how is it that academia, government, media all push this?
Well, it's driven by the oligarchs that are behind driving the technologies. What I've found in researching all of this is most of the really, really big funders are oligarchic billionaires who are investing in medical technologies. And so the political apparatus for driving it into the culture is happening through the human rights political apparatus of the LGB. You know, they added the T, early 20s, and started cultivating acceptance of that through the LGB, when it really has nothing to do with same-sex attraction, except for the fact that, and this is really not a small matter, especially gay men, but lesbians as well, will be using a lot more technological reproduction in the future. But they attached it to this, to what was once a human rights movement, but is also now an industry in commodified sexual identities. There's nothing wrong with same-sex attraction. It's been happening since humans hit the planet. It's, you know, it's not really a big deal, except to some people. But the cultivation of an industry out of these identities, of making them corporate identities, has manifested into a marketing constituency, which is about $4.7 trillion or we're in the trillions at this point. It doesn't matter. Is it 4.5? Is it 4.7? Is it 4.3? But you get the gist. It's in the trillions of dollars, this marketing constituency. And so this apparatus has been built to govern acceptance, cultural, institutional, market acceptance of this ideology of dissociation from physical reality. Like the Human Rights Campaign in America has a corporate index and a medical index. They've got an index for just about every sector of society. So now if you score high on this index, this is commercial now, if you score high on this index, we will support your company with our $4.5 trillion marketing constituency. And if you don't, if you don't get on board for this ideology of body dissociation, industrial body dissociation, we will ruin you. So for instance, like in 2014, North Carolina wanted to hang on to their sex segregated bathrooms, public bathrooms, and Intel, Microsoft, Salesforce, Google, all the major tech corporations got together to sign an amicus brief that said, basically, if you do not get on board with protecting transgender people, we will ruin you. We will take our money out of your state. You know, like, why do all these corporations, these technological corporations, care about people's inner fields? You know, like, what is that? Unless you're expecting a whole lot more of them, you're not going to be creating this kind of, you know, scene over it. Do you know what I mean?
You mentioned something earlier that resonated with me. This whole agenda is not just superficial. I mean, it's infiltrated the cultural psyche to the point where people genuinely are making comments about what a woman is at the highest echelons of society. How can we be saying this in 2024?
Well, because we have the technology to create a virtual reality. Basically, a cult is a virtual reality, but on a smaller scale. You know, once you send that cult indoctrination out into the culture and the market to the level it's been penetrated now, now you're creating, or basically on the cusp of creating, a virtual reality where people believe that transgender people actually exist. There certainly are people that call themselves transgender for myriad different reasons. And some of them, you know, have their reproductive anatomy medically assaulted. Some of them don't. You know, some of them have a fetish. Some of them don't. Some are kids. Some are adults. But there's no actual person that has transcended their sex. This is corporate propaganda raised to the level of cult indoctrination. And it's done with money and technology. We are on our technology far more every year, right? Here we are having this conversation on technology, and kids are always on their tech, you know, because you can't really send them outside anymore if you live in an urban area by themselves. I mean, as kids, we used to be sent out, you know, into the street in the morning and, you know, come on home at night when the lights go out or when the dinner bell rings, whatever, right? I live in New York City. I grew up in New York City. So this is like unthinkable today. You know, kids have to be brought somewhere by their parents and they have to be entertained constantly thereby, right? It's no more just go learn in your environment. So kids aren't learning from their natural environment. I mean, part of education is living in the real world, the biological world, but they don't live there anymore. They live in their technology and they live in very contrived environments.
You said sex. I've always had an awkward feeling when I say it because it makes me think of the bedroom. But when I was growing up, I used the word gender. Now, apparently, these have got different meanings now.
Along with most everything else. The truth is a lie and the lie is a truth. I mean, come on.
But I mean, are they the same thing, Jennifer? I mean, on a form, if I fill in a government form, it says gender, M or F, and I tick the M.
Well, it doesn't mean sex anymore, which is indicated by other now on forms, which means that you can choose your sex. Originally, those MFs meant, you know, male or female. So it meant sex. And gender was another way to say sex without feeling like you're talking about somebody's, you know, actions in the bedroom, right? But now it's used to indicate and obscure this industry in body dissociation for profit and for eugenics. Basically, they're trying to change our species to eradicate the binary between male and female, because with reproductive technologies in the future, you won't need it. You know, and this is tied again to the LGB to as a front for it being a human rights movement for the marginalized. Anyone seeking to disown their sex is not a marginalized community. They're not oppressed. They're just seeking to disown reality. You know, that doesn't entail having a whole human rights structure for you. Gender rights right now are basically the gestational phase of rights for the augmented, for augmented humanity and artificial intelligence.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, we already have robots that are out in the farmer's field picking carrots and doing a large bulk of the physical labor for the farmer, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, they're all over the place now. We have, you know, soldier robots, we have police robots, we have artificial intelligence. So, and a lot of people that are invested in this field believe that it's moving much faster, you know, in growth than our own intelligence and will somehow surmount what they're saying is human intelligence. I'm not sure it's actually comparable to human thought, but that's, you know, it's a discussion for another time. So these alternate structures, they're not human, but they think and they act very much like us. A lot of them look like us, the robots that they're making. They have sex dolls now that look and feel like women. Some robot men as sex dolls too, but women aren't buying them. Jesus. I mean, it's just so depraved. I have to laugh or I'm going to cry.
A scary outcome of this appears to be asking the question, what is a human, ultimately? What I'm saying is, in the same way that we have people now asking, what is a woman, that seems to be the next phase.
And this has all been, you know, this is all happening, you know, behind the scenes, and people aren't really looking at it. Most people aren't really invested in looking at the technologies behind what we use as technologies, like our computers, like what happens behind that. Who invented that? Why did they invent that? How did it come into the culture? Blah, blah, blah. You know, artificial reproduction, technological reproduction. How did that come about? How is that being used? How is it growing? What is the market for this? People don't really think about that. And especially because this has been presented as a human rights movement for the marginalized. So they don't have to go anywhere else. And a lot of people who haven't been captured by the cult indoctrination, they just think this is a fad or a medical scandal or a cultural phenomenon that's evolved into a contagion. I mean, certainly those elements are there. This is a medical scandal. It is a social contagion. But at root, it is a technological agenda to change our species' perceptions of ourselves as, you know, sexually dimorphic animals, mammals.
But okay, so Jennifer, let me play devil's advocate. Can there be a positive net benefit at all?
No, it's only going to get worse. All the problems that we're already seeing are only going to grow and get worse. And there's a lot of organizations that are resisting this whole thing, but they don't really know what they're looking at. And they really have no forethought as to where this is going to wind up. And they're politically compromising or capitulating with the powerful that have the means to drive this narrative forward and these technologies forward.
Is there genuinely true transgenderism? Like, for example, those people who, what's the term now, where they get born with confusing X and Y chromosomes? I forget the terminology now.
Intersex conditions are, they're developmental disorders in sexual reproductive anatomy. And that's all it is. They're male or female. The disorders themselves are just, they're disorders. It's kind of like if a person was born with one leg, it doesn't mean that humans are now of a species that have one leg, two legs, or a third leg if they grow one extra. Do you know what I mean? It's just a disorder of development.
Do you think it's a good idea then that people use the term transgender? Because doesn't that actually enable the agenda? Should we simply reject saying it?
I think so. Or, you know, I mean, the title of my book has the word transgender in it, transsexual and transhuman, neither of which are real in terms of people, but they are certainly real in terms of systems that are attempting to change our perceptions of ourselves as a species. These systems are working in confluence. They are very, very powerful. They are very, very moneyed, and they're working because people have been indoctrinated to see this as a type of person. It's not a type of person. Nobody's transcending anything. So if you're going to use the word, you should attach it to the system. What is this system? Why are people being called this? And as far as transgender, I mean, there's so many things floating around under this umbrella. It's like, what does that even mean? It doesn't really even mean anything. It's just a bridging from vestiture and mining of sex to deceive the population about your sex to using technologies to do so.
What about the impact on children?
Oh, God. Well, like we can see how that's playing out already. I mean, there's a lot of people that are leaving the cult and speaking out, which is great, but they are also censored as well as anybody else who is trying to critique this issue. It's all framed as hate speech, Nazism, Hitlerism, anti-Semitism, etc., etc., homophobia. If you try to critique this, you will suffer. And people have gotten very, very comfortable. They don't want to suffer. They don't want to lose their jobs. They don't want to lose their book contracts. They don't want to lose the other things, social standing, their friends. They don't want to lose these things. Of course not. But if people don't stand up and, you know, start resisting this, I mean, it will take us over. It will take us over. And we will be changed as a species. And maybe probably not in ways that we want to be, you know, in ways that remove us from the biosphere, you know, the natural world. I like my humanity. I like being attached to the natural world.
Jennifer, one of the things that I've been thinking about is, let's say a man or a woman goes for transition surgery or whatever. And I mean, I've got my views and I would often consider them fairly idiotic. But what about the surgeon and the system, the medical system that allows us? I mean, should those doctors be held accountable?
To my mind, absolutely. But we have to look at the medical industry now compared to what it was, say, when I was a kid, many, many years ago now. When I went to the doctor, I went to one doctor for if I had a broken leg, if I had a, you know, a hangnail that got infected, if, you know, I had the flu or bronchitis or whatever it was, I went to the same doctor who helped me heal. Now, you can't go to a single doctor. That's impossible. You have to go to the doctor to get a referral to a specialist for whatever part of your body is bothering you. And they treat that one particular thing. And the doctors rely on sort of a larger network of research and information about particular issues to, you know, help their patients. They're not skilled in that area themselves, so they're getting that information from somewhere else. And the research has been infiltrated by this ideology. So they're getting this information that this is productive and good for the patient. And they're also indoctrinated with the same cultural messages that we are. You know, it's in all the stories on TV, you know, all the movies. There are transgender modeling agencies now, non-binary makeup.
Cartoon Network also.
A Cartoon Network. All the programming for children have the same thing. And it's absolutely relentless. It's like a drumbeat in the background. You can't get away from it. So they've been indoctrinated on the one hand, just like we have. And then they have, you know, the medical institution itself has been captured by this ideology. It's been driven into these systems with gobs of money.
How do we push back?
Well, first of all, you have to really get a clue as to what you're dealing with here. Most people haven't a clue. You know, like I said, they're looking at this as some sort of cultural phenomenon that came out of the universities and queer theory. No, not actually. I mean, queer theory is just an analysis. It's just a theory. You know, this is being implemented. This is an industry now. And it's being driven into the, you know, into the world with money by oligarchs who are poised to profit and have more power and control over human development.
Who are some of the oligarchs?
Well, you have the Pritzker family, which I mentioned earlier. Jennifer Pritzker is a man who is middle-aged, calls it, well, probably more than middle-aged, but he calls himself a transgender woman. And he's been married twice, I think, and has three children. You know, one day he dons some pearls and a scarf and says, you know, I'm a woman now. You know, get in line and start referring to me as such to his employees. And his whole family is worth about $29 billion. They're enormous. I mean, it's a pretty large family. His cousin, Penny Pritzker, was Obama's Secretary of State. And she basically drew him out of obscurity and, you know, introduced him to the major philanthropic funders and got him into the White House, where he became the first transgender president, which he put forth all these different bills and laws to accommodate this concept of a transgender person and to drive the narrative that it, you know, somehow a human rights movement for the marginalized. Penny's brother is J.B. Pritzker, who is governor of Illinois. And after these major reports dropped in the United States on WPATH, which is the World Professional Association for Transgender Health, and the other one was the CAS report, you know, lots of people that are resisting this industry were like, oh, this is so wonderful. This is so great. This is going to change everything. And then J.B. Pritzker made his state a sanctuary state for children. So if they can get across the line, the state line, they'll be free to get any kind of manipulations, you know, medical technological assaults on their anatomy that they want.
Here on the African continent, we are quite behind the times. And so, you know, we'll always catch up.
Oh, not
later.
For long.
Yeah.
Not for long.
Well,
the
exactly.
LGBT organizations in the United States, the largest and most significant ones, the Gill Foundation and the Arcus Foundation, are now, having driven this through, you know, Western societies, you know, very successfully, they're now, their focus now is on the global South. And, you know, you ask me, you know, how do we confront this? You know, you have to confront the power behind it. You can't just be running around talking about gender and identity and, you know, gender nonconformity and all the things that flow downstream of the power that's driving it into the culture. Do you know what I mean? Like all of these things that are happening because they're trying to obscure first toward an avenue of deconstructing, you know, sex, reproductive sex.
Yeah, but Jennifer, you're talking about a very big power differential. You and I don't really have much power compared to the system, you know, compared to the technological industrial complex.
Of course not, which is why we're in the situation we're in. But, you know, you can't possibly fight this thing if you don't fight it by telling the truth about what it is. People don't know what it is. First of all, we're censored. And second of all, most of the people that are able to get a platform aren't really talking about the power behind it and what's driving it, the deconstruction of reproductive sex. That's what's driving this whole thing, for power, for money, and for eugenics. And, you know, unless we can get more and more people engaged in that conversation, we don't have a prayer sending this back. You know, it's like sort of playing whack-a-mole. Oh, you'll get some women's rights back. You might be able to, you know, roll back the surgeries for younger children. But the whole concept of a transgender person or a transsexual person still remains. And this will continue to grow because it's an industry. And once you put it into the market takes care of it. So you have to be telling the truth about what it is. And then, you know, we are an enormously creative species, enormously creative species. There's so much potential there to resist this if we know what we're dealing with. But people have to, again, start to get conscious about what this actually is. And that means informing yourself, but also getting by the censors. A lot of alternate media has come up and people are getting more and more platforms, which is great. I mean, look, I'm on your platform, right? This is great. I can't get into the mainstream. Even the larger podcasts won't touch me with a 10-foot pole because this is tech pharma's baby. And if you mess with that baby, then you're messing with your profits because the media is governed by tech and pharma. So that's really a great development. And, you know, there's Kelly J. Keene, who works in the UK. She's a women's rights campaigner. And she has completely bypassed the censors by going into the streets and creating a public platform in the park for women. She's now been all over, you know, she's been to the US, she's been to New Zealand, she's been to Australia and other countries to create this same sort of format where women will go into public and speak about this issue. And man, the flack that she gets, it's incredible. I mean, she was almost like stampeded in New Zealand because she's bypassing the censors, but this has to happen more and more and more. And people have to get out of this, you know, this, like there's been this little narrative set up for us, which is what everybody's adhering to. Even in the United States, what we call the right wing, I mean, it's really kind of a mixed bag now. I mean, the right is kind of turned into the left and the left is kind of turned into the right. It's very bizarre. But there are platforms on the Republican side that have published my articles and such. Megyn Kelly, you know, but not many of them. Well, she's also an independent, you know, she's independent media. Weirdly enough, she's on Sirius XM satellite platform, which is a platform made by Martine Rothblatt, the founding father of the gender industry. You know, he's also the author of the first gender bill. So he's author of the legal structure around this whole agenda, this cult. What do? We have to tell the truth about what's really happening here. So more and more people understand what it is. And you have to get brave to do that because you're going to be censored. You're going to be ostracized. You're going to be socially a social pariah. You know, you're going to have your books not published and you're going to have your platforms canceled on YouTube and your monetary streams interrupted. It's going to happen. But, you know, think about what's going to happen if you don't do that. People can't leave this up to somebody else, to some few activists that are speaking out. No. This is your issue too. And it's really been sort of cordoned off into a women's issue too, because women have the lion's share of responsibility for reproductive technologies. So they're the ones that are being linguistically, socially, legally, and commercially erased. You know, men aren't. So they don't understand how this is going to impact humanity.
And that's a good point. It's not something that I've thought of until now, but men actually are driving this, not women.
Yes, mostly men are driving this. Mostly, at the very, very core, it's men who desire to be women and gay men who, powerful, you know, elitist gay men who seek to advance reproduction so that gay men can have children on their own, sans women, or, you know, using women as incubators, easy bake ovens.
Where does modern feminism stand on this?
Well, on the one hand, I mean, feminists are doing tremendous work to get information out there. I mean, you know, with like no money. So on the one hand, it's amazing. But more broadly, feminism has been corporately captured. So there's a bigger coalition of feminists who are supporting this. So it looks like to the mainstream, feminists support this. But there is the smaller faction of feminists who do not. And they're very, very vocal and they're very, very active and they're getting things changed. And that's great. But I really think that it's imperative that we move out of this being a women's issue because this is a human issue. If you want to remain human, yeah, if you want to stay that way, you're going to have to get involved in this.
On that train of thought, the undercurrent in this conversation is essentially eugenics and depopulation, and of course, transhumanism. And we know that there is massive depopulation happening around the world in terms of acceleration of growth. How important is this topic then? I would suspect it's right near the top in terms of the importance hierarchy.
Oh, yeah. But people are nowhere near seeing that. They're nowhere near seeing that. You know, it's right up there with World War III, nuclear war, genetic manipulation. You know, genetic manipulation is part of this whole thing. And, you know, there's other things up there. It's a war. It's a war on humanity. That's what it is. It's a technological war on humanity.
But then, Jennifer, the light at the end of the tunnel, I mean, do you see it or is that just a train coming towards us?
You know, we already see a lot of natural upheaval in the world. You know, rapaciously stealing the resources, the gifts that the planet has given us. And that's not going to continue to be able to continue to happen without more and more natural upheaval. Like, you can't hold reality back. You know what I mean? So there's, we have that on our side, and we have to, you know, learn how to utilize that. Basically, life wants to live. If a man has a hole drilled inside of him and he's calling that a vagina, well, guess what? He's got to use a tool to keep that wound, what the natural body sees as a wound. He has to use that every single day to keep that illusion alive. And basically, that's the same thing, you know, for us on a grand scale. We can continue with this trajectory of trying to subdue and subordinate the natural world in all the ways that we do. But eventually, reality will come forth. Do you know what I mean? And we have to support that process in whatever ways that we can. And some of that is getting off of technology so we're not so indoctrinated with it.
But you mean, you're effectively making the argument that nobody's coming to save us. The change will come from within and from a grassroots level.
Yes, that's true. That's true. And there's many more of us than there are of them, which terrifies them, which is why they want to censor us. I have very ambivalent feelings about Elon Musk. On the one hand, he's got, you know, the only platform that's not censoring people, but he's also collecting everybody's data for his AI and his Neuralink. So it's kind of like, wow, we're really in the crapper.
He is one of those weird individuals. I mean, I don't know so many people that have got so many mixed feelings about him. He's very strange, isn't he?
he's unusual.
I don't know what to make of him. I've got a love-hate relationship because he comes from my side of the world. In fact, he went to school very close to where my wife went to school. And because we don't have that much to offer, I like to go, well, there we go. We've got somebody, you know, who's made it big in the world. But on the other hand, he's big in the world because, you know, he's part of the establishment, most likely.
Yes, in many ways, he couldn't help but be. But, you know, he understands the... He does. I believe that he understands the importance of free speech, or this country is just going down. You know, it's already circling the drain. So if we don't have free speech, we're done in. So he does get that, I think. But, you know, he believes that people, you know, it will be great when people have the choice to be cyborgs. Yeah, and I'm not with him on that. He's also very... attuned to the developments in AI and other technologies, and they are coming at us like a train, like you said. And if you don't change the environment to accommodate them, which also entails accommodating our perceptions of ourselves to make way for these technologies, then we're going to be, you know, we're going to be in trouble, because there's a lot of nefarious forces that are also developing these technologies. So he's kind of like, he's poised himself as like the good transhumanist, and maybe he is, but I'm not so sure.
Yeah, dude. I know exactly what you mean. I'm constantly having a tug of war with all things Elon. Jennifer, okay, give me a nugget of wisdom as we come in for a closing year.
I always like to use this old Dakota saying that seems really simple. You know, the further away that we go from technology, the harder our hearts become. And this is, I think, very, very profound, and it encapsulates what's happening to us. You know, the further away we go from the natural world, that we understand that we are connected to this natural world, that this natural world is what sustains us, not technology, not the supermarket. This is our mother. We can't let go of our attachment to mother. The world is our mother, and we can't let her be erased along with the way that they're trying to erase mothers in the culture.
How can I follow your work?
I have a new book out, Transsexual, Transgender, Transhuman, Dispatches from the 11th Hour, which can be bought on SpinFX or Amazon. And I love the fact that Jeff Bezos is supporting my work. And also I have a blog, the 11thhourblog.com. The 11 is numerical. And I have a Substack, Jay Billick newsletter. So, yeah.
And does your book ship, wait for it, Transatlantic? I'm sorry.
Yes, it chipped everywhere.
I couldn't resist. All right, Jennifer Billick, thank you so much for joining me in the trenches.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure, Jeremy. Thank you so much for having me on.
If you you enjoyed this podcast, please visit supportgerm.com.